His name is Lyle Pressler, punk rock legend and music industry vet. His name is Jim Shear, most tenured DJ in the history of music television. It's the Week in Music with Lyle and Jim, and it all starts now.
Happy summer, everybody. My name is Jim Shear.
And I'm Lyle Pressler.
And on today's episode, AC/DC have officially announced their makeup tour dates with brand new frontman Axl Rose. Jack White makes a TV theme tune. Ronnie Wood is a father of twins at the ripe old age of 68. We talk Governor's Ball. We have our song picks of the week. We'll play Ask Lyle. But first, we got to talk about Prophets of Rage.
Prophets of Rage, the countdown clock.
Yeah, it ran out. And as it turns out, our Prophets of Rage surprise was a show at West Hollywood's Whiskey A Go-Go last night. The supergroup, they played music from Rage Against the Machine, Cypress Hill, Public Enemy, and they have some originals. And we are promised another countdown update, I should say, in 2 days.
What do you think? Do you think that's going to be the original songs?
I think it's the original songs. It has to be.
Yeah.
Or at least one of them.
Yeah, I mean, I would think they would have recorded at least one.
So, you want me to go down the set list?
Sure.
Did you see any of the video from last night?
No, I have not.
I have.
How is it?
And this is sad to say, but the more I hear and the more I see, the less excited I am.
Right.
They started off with Prophets of Rage, fittingly, which is a Public Enemy cover.
Mm-hmm.
They went into Gorilla Radio and Bomb Track, which are Rage Against the Machine songs. Then My Uzi Weighs a Ton from Public Enemy, People of the Sun from Rage Against the Machine, Take the Power Back from Rage Against the Machine, Rock Superstar from Cypress Hill, Testify from Rage Against the Machine. Then they went into a Public Enemy Cypress Hill medley, which included Shoot 'Em Up, Can't Trust It, Insane in the Membrane, Bring the Noise, I Ain't Going Out Like That, Welcome to the Terror Dome. Came back with some Rage Against the Machine, Sleep Now in the Fire. Then Shut Them Down, not Shut 'Em Down from Public Enemy, but Shut Them Down from Prophets of Rage. Know Your Enemy from Rage Against the Machine, The Party's Over from Prophets of Rage. You asked, I believe, last week, why is the party over? Well, I guess we'll find out in that song.
I suppose so.
Then there was No Sleep Till Brooklyn from the Beastie Boys, Fight the Power from Public Enemy, Bulls on Parade from Rage Against the Machine. They leave the stage, everyone asks for an encore, they come back, and they end the night with Killing in the Name from Rage Against the Machine.
Hmm.
And if you're wondering, Lyle, according to drummer Brad Wilk, Zach De La Roca is working on an album. Now, is that comedy or is he being serious?
I think that's probably trying to be a little bit wry. That's sort of a, you know, it's sort of an Oscar Wilde kind of comment. Oh, I think he's working on an album.
Because the joke is he's been working on this album for 16 years.
Right.
Yeah. And according to the band, they have Zach De La Roca's blessing to do this Prophets of Rage supergroup.
Well, I don't see why they wouldn't have sought it, and whether or not he gave it to them is another issue.
Yeah, so I really want to be excited about this, but I'm not there yet.
Right.
And it's weird having two frontmen on stage.
That is a little bit strange. Yeah.
And it is their first show, so I'm sure 10 shows from now they'll be smoother, but there was a part in the show where Tom Morello was doing a solo and Be Real was just kind of nodding his head and looking at him and then gesturing to the crowd like, how about this? And of course, well, that's what Tom Morello does.
That's what he does.
Yeah.
Well, so, it'll be interesting to see how it works out. Yeah.
Yeah. So on Friday, maybe we'll get a really cool treat from Prophets of Rage. Another super band, per se, AC/DC, with Axl Rose as their frontman, they have officially rescheduled their 10 makeup dates. They will take place following Guns N' Roses' Not In This Lifetime tour. So the dates run from late August to late September. And Lyle, if we're interested, we can catch this at Madison Square Garden on September 14th.
Wow, okay.
So the story here is that Axl and Guns N' Roses will do their stadium tour, which happens all summer long. And then after that, he will do AC/DC dates. So he's going to be either really warmed up and ready to go, or he's going to be burned out.
Yeah.
You think it'll be the former or the latter?
It's hard to say. I mean, if you told me this 5 years ago, I'd say it would be the latter. He'd be completely burned out. I don't know, but I don't know what his state is at this point. I mean, maybe, you know, it seems to me that he's the kind of guy who probably wouldn't have signed on if he didn't think he could do it. But thinking you can do something and being able to do it are two completely different things.
Yes. And hopefully he's out of his foot cast for the summer tour.
Absolutely.
'Cause I'm just getting bummed out seeing guys sitting down while playing. And I understand the show must go on and appreciate that, but I want to see my front men running around on stage. And yes, I'm talking about Dave Grohl and Axl Rose.
I agree, definitely. Otherwise, it's just like, oh, look at the man in the chair. It reminds you of going to like a, you know, like a B.B. King show or a Muddy Waters thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Jack White has written the theme tune to Maya Rudolph and Martin Short's variety show, Maya and Martin, which premiered last night. Let's take a quick listen. All right. I like that it's, you know, it's poppy. It has the Jack White touch, but it still makes sense for network TV. I think, well done, Jack White.
Yeah, it sounds fine to me. I mean, it doesn't seem like that big a deal. I mean, I read this is the first time he's ever done music for a television show, and it's like, okay, you know.
Yeah, I read that too, but he's done a James Bond theme, and then for the season finale of The Muppets, he covered Stevie Wonder's You're the Sunshine of My Life. So he's done work for TV and film. I guess he hasn't written an original TV theme song, so he has that now on his resume.
Right. I thought it sounded good. I mean, I haven't seen it in context, so you know, it always takes on a different perspective when you see it actually with, you know, with the visuals.
Yeah, like if someone turns to the camera and winks.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
That might ruin it a little bit.
Yeah, or if, you know, Maya, like, you know, grabs his face, as I've seen in the stills.
In a recent piece in the Source magazine, Roots drummer Questlove listed 40 reasons why Prince was a hip-hop pioneer. Some of his reasons included limited access to music forces him to create his own world of music, overcame poverty, refused to be ordinary and eschewed the proper English language as a ways to communicate, and in that he spelled the twos with the number two, as Prince would regularly do.
Mm-hmm.
Knew the B-side wins again and again, cut his crew off and got a new crew, parental advisory was invented because of him, made a black album with a chip on his shoulder to prove to black people he was still bad, had an MTV mansion / compound long before anyone did, and left us way too early.
Are those the best reasons he gave?
Those are the best reasons.
You cherry-picked the best ones? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's fine. That's fine. But, I mean, I could go through and make an argument for almost anybody if you really want to. I mean, there's so...
Well, the thing is, when I read that list, I thought, well, there's punk groups and rock groups that could be hip-hop then.
Well, yeah, and it sort of reminds me of the argument that Miles Davis belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because... Why? Because Jimi Hendrix liked him? You know?
And then NWA went up this year and they said, hey, we're rock and roll.
Right, exactly. So. But, you know, I mean, I do applaud the fact that he actually sat down and came up with 40 things, which is not easy to do.
And he's a musical nerd.
Absolutely.
So I love that he is still nerding out. And if anyone gave a legit tribute to Prince, it would be Questlove.
Absolutely.
So you can read the entire list in the Source magazine. And then Thomas Fachetti, guitarist of Florida indie band Surfer Blood, died from a rare and aggressive form of cancer. He was only 27 years old. He left the band last year after he was diagnosed.
Oh, that's horrible.
It's crazy. When I heard this story, I think of Thomas as just a kid.
Mm.
But then I look at the age 27, and automatically when you have that age and rock music, you think of Jimi Hendrix and Kurt Cobain and Janis Joplin.
That's true.
And to me, this is sadder than that because I felt like Janis and Jimmy and Kurt kind of brought a lot of that on themselves.
Yes.
And here's a kid just playing music. He comes up with this form of cancer and he's dead at the age of 27.
Yeah, it's a real shame.
So we go to break with some Surfer Blood, and when we come back, Lyle and I will help you out with your tough decisions this weekend at Governor's Ball. I need you in the here and now. Instead of dreaming up a way to spread your name across the world somehow. When you told me you were leaving, I wasn't thirsty for revenge. No, I wasn't disappointed much at all, 'cause you'll be back again. Hey there, we're back, Jim Scheer and Lyle Presler. So on Memorial Day, the History Channel premiered a remake of the Roots miniseries, which was promptly boycotted by Snoop Dogg, who said, they're going to just keep beating that shit into our heads about how they did us? Huh? And this should come as no surprise because Snoop Dogg doesn't support any TV shows or films that deal with slavery. Mm. In The Hollywood Reporter, Snoop says, let's create our own shit based on today, how we live and how we inspire people today. Black is what's real. F that old shit. You know what? I'm with Snoop. Are you?
Well, I think it's pretty complicated. First of all, I think there are shows that...
Oh, it's very complicated.
There are definitely shows that are on that don't draw upon the past or slavery. But on the other hand, if you want to compare it to another historical event, the Holocaust,
yes,
which is similar in scope, if not in actual the actual nature of it. But the argument about continuing to make movies about the Holocaust has always been to make sure that people don't just file it away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because what happens is, once a movie, a powerful movie, is 10 years old, it's largely out of the collective consciousness. And you get young people who grow up, and the concern has always been they grow up without any real, like, powerful understanding. And one of the things that film and TV and can produce, if it's done well, is a powerful understanding of history, as opposed to reading it on a page. And sometimes that is its own issue, because sometimes it's not real history. It's sort of fictionalized or dramatized history, which can be fine, but sometimes runs afoul of the truth. But at least it's kind of a powerful gateway to a reality. So when you look at something like Roots, and I remember watching Roots when it first was on TV as a kid, and it was powerful to me because here was depicted by very good actors some of the things that happened and the way people felt about them, which is very difficult to get a lot of the time, because if you want to know how people felt about something, you're often reading secondhand accounts about how people felt, or you're reading letters. If you really want to get into it, delve deep into it, you're reading letters that people wrote or things that they left behind. But since history is often written by the victors, so to speak, it's important sometimes to try to get to the victims or to the people who experienced in a negative way the things that happened. So I understand where he's coming from, because I think at a certain point you say enough, you know, we can't wallow in this victimhood, if you will. But I also think that with each new generation, it's important to make sure that they understand what happened and why we are who we are today, whether it's Europe, whether it's the United States, wherever it is. And if you look at the contrast, you know, in Russia, they hardly even talk about Stalin, who was the absolute worst possible, I mean, maybe the worst person in history, especially in terms of the numbers of people that he killed. So there are places where there isn't even an access to the past, and there certainly isn't access on a powerful level. So I don't know. I understand where he's coming from, but I think...
Yeah, because we definitely need to be reminded, but how much do we need to be reminded?
Well, yes, and also you have to remember that some of this stuff is I mean, is it really done with the best intentions? Is it done?
Right.
Is it done just to make money? You know, I don't know.
Because my first thought is, well, what's wrong with the original Roots miniseries?
That's what I thought.
And I mean, I always think of that when they remake Willy Wonka. I thought, well, the first one's odd. Like, why do you need to remake anything? Just go to the first one.
Right. Right. Well,
and
you know,
we live in an age where everything is so accessible. So you could sit down a grade school or high school class and show them the original Roots miniseries.
Well, yeah. And I mean, the children are resistant to this idea because it's old. You know, I don't want anything
right.
old. I want something new. And because the new stuff is splashier and often uses music and it has its own sort mm-hmm. of power. But, you know, my daughter sat down and watched the original Willy Wonka and loved it, and watched the new one and was nonplussed. So,
okay.
you know, so sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand. I agree with you. That was the first thing that came into my mind was when I saw the promos for it, which have been running now for months. I thought, you know, why don't they just show the original? I mean, we got LeVar Burton. I mean, why not just show the original? And I'm sure they did in some places.
I don't know. And the History Channel, I'm not familiar with the productions they're putting out. But I think of their earlier productions, and I thought, I don't know if I want to see that. So,
well, have you watched Vikings, or as I call it, Vikings?
No, I haven't.
Well, Viking,
is that on the History Channel?
Yeah, and that's
okay.
That's now talk about playing fast and loose with history. it really, I mean, it's like, because we don't know much about the Vikings, okay, other than the stuff they left behind. They weren't a literate society, civilization. And there were many different splinter groups and whatever, and they're all sort of loosely called the Vikings. But it's pretty dramatic. It's pretty well done, I have to say. It's pretty gory, though.
Okay.
I only watched the first season, and I've watched maybe one or two shows since then. But it's compelling in its own way. But I would hardly call it history.
Yeah, and I probably won't be watching the new Roots miniseries.
I don't think I will. I think
but the great thing about this is I love that Snoop Dogg is creating dialogue.
Absolutely, and that's
so
what's
the
great
more
about
people
it.
Talk about it, the better it is.
Absolutely.
And right now, I would like to congratulate 68-year-old Rolling Stones guitarist Ronnie Wood.
Uh-huh.
His wife gave birth to twins on Monday, and in case you're wondering, Woods has four other children from previous relationships.
Well, is there nothing those guys can't do at advanced age?
68 years old, proud new papa, Ronnie Wood.
Congratulations.
Summer festival season is upon us, and this weekend, Governor's Ball converges on Randall's Island in New York City. As is the case with most festivals, we're presented with choices of which bands to see when, which isn't always an easy decision. So today, Lyle and I are going to help you out with the tough decisions in life.
Okay.
So, first of all, will you be attending Governor's Ball this weekend, Lyle?
No, I will not.
No.
I have a wedding to go to, so.
Oh, okay. That's a good excuse. Yeah, a convenient excuse. But you know what? I won't be attending either. And there was some beef between Governor's Ball and the Panorama Fest, which is put on by the Coachella organizers, because Governor's Ball said, well, there should only be one big festival in the city. Like, don't dilute it.
Right.
So, and I think there's a beef between Governor's Ball and Panorama Fest because they're both indie-minded.
Mm.
Like, if you're not into your indie music, you probably won't want to go to Governor's Ball.
Right.
Yeah. So, on Friday, here's the first choice I will present. Beck and Matt and Kim perform at the same time on different stages.
Mm.
So, if you're at the festival, Lyle, do you go with Beck or Matt and Kim?
I'm going with Matt and Kim.
Matt and Kim, why?
Well, because I've seen Beck.
Okay.
Several times.
Okay.
So I don't need to see that again, I don't think.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm not making a musical judgment here.
Okay.
But I mean, I always think of these things as, if in my mind, I think of these things as opportunities to see things that I haven't seen. Or to see things that I really, really need to see.
So you've never seen Matt and Kim?
No.
Oh, yeah, I have. They're good, and they're fun.
That's what it seemed to me. It's fun, you know, and not that Beck's not fun, but I think if I had a choice, I'd probably skip Beck.
See, for me, I've seen Matt and Kim many times,
okay,
and I've seen them many times at festivals. It's always a fun show. They get the crowd into it, but I haven't seen Beck in a while.
Okay, well, there
so
you go.
I want to see if Beck can still bring it, so I guess at this point in the festival, we split up, and we will converge later.
Meet back at the beer tent.
Yeah. So then later in the day, you've got Jamie XX or Block Party.
I think I'd go with Bloc Party.
Okay. See, once again, we're not going to spend a lot of time at this festival. I'm going Jamie XX.
Yeah, that just didn't. That just doesn't do it for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, Bloc Party once treated me badly in an interview.
Oh, okay.
And I've never forgiven them.
So that's there's personal issues here.
Or maybe I would go with you and I would throw stuff at them while they're on stage.
Okay. All right.
And in case you're wondering, Robin closes out Friday night, and there's no one else playing when Robin performs.
Okay.
Which is nice, because a lot of festivals, there'll be one headliner, and there's no conflict.
Right.
I can't say that about Lollapalooza. I've had many conflicts at Lollapalooza. The one year, I think it was Coldplay or Muse, and I thought, who do I go with? Yeah, I know. Yeah, tough decisions.
Who did
in life.
You go with?
I had to work, so I didn't get to see anybody.
Okay. Yeah. So it wasn't really a conflict.
Well, no, what was happening as the workday was going on, I thought, well, maybe it'll end and I'll go get to see someone. And long story short, we had to work through the night and I didn't get to see anyone. Mm-hmm. So I think I was going to go with Muse, though.
I think I would have gone with Muse, yeah.
Yeah. So on Saturday, playing at the same time, Against Me or De La Soul?
Against Me.
Mmm.
I think the story of Against Me is just too fascinating.
With Laura Jane Grace.
Yes, and that's why I would do it.
Have you seen Against Me with Laura Jane Grace yet?
No, yeah, because they were supposed to open for Bad Religion, and they bowed out at the last second.
Yeah, I love Against Me. I also happen to love my old school hip-hop.
I do too, I do too. But again, to me, De La Soul is like... been there, done that kind of thing. I mean, once again, your argument about Beck, well, can they bring it? Yeah, okay. I mean, these are tough choices. That's why you picked them.
Yeah. So, you know what? Maybe you could sway me. Maybe if you were showing me some energy, Lyle, I'd be like, all right, yeah, let's go see Against Me.
Well, if we had jetpacks, we could just go to one and then jetpack over to the other.
I know.
That would be cool.
No, but it doesn't work that way.
No.
You've got to walk the festival grounds. It takes a good... 10 or 15 minutes.
That's right.
So I find this next one interesting because they're both electronic pop groups. Purity Ring, an electronic pop group from Canada, or Mike Snow, an electronic pop group from Sweden.
Well, of the two that I've, you know, of the stuff I've heard from both, I would go with Mike Snow.
I would go with Mike Snow too.
Yeah. I just think it seems
a little more vibrant, a little more poppier.
Yeah, and I think it's a little more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And then M83 closes out the night on Saturday. And you had an M83 song as your music pick of the week.
Absolutely.
A handful of weeks ago with
Absolutely.
Go.
With Go.
Which is also being considered by some radio programmers as the song of the summer.
Interesting.
As the race just begins. And then on Sunday night, the last day of Governor's Ball in Randall's Island in New York City, you've got Gary Clark Jr. playing... at the same time as the quote-unquote special guest.
Well.
So hopefully the special guest is announced by then. But let's say it's Sunday. You've got Gary Clark Jr. and special guest in bold capital letters. Who do you go see?
I guess I'd have to go see special guest.
But how special is the special guest?
Well, I don't know that. But I mean, as I've always said to people, Jim, as you get older... there are no good surprises in life, only bad ones. So when you're presented with a potentially good surprise, you take it. It's like my daughter always wants to tell me what somebody got me for my birthday or something, and I'm like, no, I don't want to know. Please, I have very little in my life that's a good surprise, so let me just keep that. She doesn't understand that concept, but I think as you get going in life, you begin to understand it a little bit. But I would like to see Gary Clark, so I don't know.
I feel like special guest is if something goes wrong, if a set goes too long or too short, and they just throw something in there.
Well, have you ever...
But if it's a legit special guest, then what I would do is I would start off at the special guest stage. If I wasn't happy with him, then I'd walk across the festival grounds and I would catch Gary Clark Jr. set 20 minutes late.
Well, it's also possible that they could reveal the special guest and then you go, no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Or have you considered, Jim, the possibility that the actual artist's name is special guest?
Ooh, now that would be disappointing.
Well, it depends on what it is, right?
Right. All right. Yeah. I mean, if I knew special guest, but I guess everyone will find out this weekend at Governor's Ball in New York City. Lyle, do you have any birthdays this week?
There are quite a few interesting birthdays. Your Ronnie Wood actually turned 68.
Wait, this week?
Yeah, today, I believe.
Oh, today? Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
So he had a very happy birthday week, I'd say.
So he was actually 67 when he became a father of two twins.
Well, at least what you get off the...
A pair of twins.
What you get off the worldwide interweb. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how accurate... I don't know how accurate any of this stuff is, to be honest with
you.
But Alanis Morissette is 41.
Oh.
Yep.
So I'm older than Alanis Morissette?
I would have thought she was older. That would be...
Yeah.
But you know...
Wow.
A woman's prerogative... is to fake the date, so you never know.
Oh, that's true.
Yes. Pat Boone.
Because in 95 and 96, she was on top of the world.
Right, absolutely.
I was doing nothing in life. And she's accomplished so much.
Absolutely. She was with Dave Coulier.
She
had Taylor Hawkins in her band, you know.
I know.
Lots of interesting stuff, yeah. Pat Boone is 81.
Okay.
Ronnie Dunn of the famous country duo Brooks and Dunn, very successful artist, is 62. And Tom Robinson of the Tom Robinson Band, most people won't remember that. It was sort of a punk new wave outfit out of England in the late 70s. He was also one of the first openly gay musicians. Of any note, yes. And has done a lot of work with Amnesty International. He is 65. So happy.
I think I'm going to check that out later today. That sounds very interesting.
Yep. The TRB, the Tom Robinson Band.
Wow. Early June. Wait, today is what? June? Is today June 1st? Oh, yes,
June
1st
is.
Today.
June
1st. Wow, okay.
Pay your bills.
So number one single on the Billboard Hot 100 this week, One Dance from Drake featuring Wizkid and Kyla. The number one album on the Billboard 200, Views from Drake. The number one song on iTunes, Can't Stop the Feeling from Justin Timberlake. The number one album on iTunes, Lemonade from Beyonce. And once again, and this has happened for the last handful of weeks, number one song on Spotify, One Dance from Drake featuring Wizkid and Kyla. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, it is time for our music picks of the week. When you dance, 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 feel a good, good creeping up on you. So just dance, 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 come on. All those things I shouldn't do, but you dance, dance, dance. And ain't nobody leaving soon, so keep dancing. Yes, everybody, time for the music picks of the week. I will go first. Mine is called X'd Eyes from a very unfortunate named band, Holy Fuck, off of their brand new album, Congrats. I've always liked the band. I've never liked the name. Because sometimes you're in a public setting or you're in a work area and people say, hey, what are you listening to? I say, I really like the Holy Fuck album. And it sounds like a punk band, but they're not.
Yeah.
It's a Canadian electronic group. When they play live, they actually like to play live instead of running loops and program beats. Sometimes they go all instrumental. I think in 2010, they put out a really nice all instrumental album, one of my favorite albums of that year. This time around, there are more tracks with vocals on it, like this one right here. And I like the break. It's not too heavy, but it's just nice. So here is X'd Eyes from, I've got to say it because it's their band name, Holy Fuck.
I see you.
cool. It's cool.
XIs.
And don't they create a lot of this music right there, right? I mean, this isn't...
Yes.
Yeah, that's one of the things that makes them interesting is that they're using actual instruments and they're using sound effects and they're using... But things that they create at the moment, which makes it more of a performance thing than anything else.
Yeah. And it brings up an interesting conversation. Bands that sound nothing like their band name. We could have a show about that.
Well, you could. And I agree with you about the Holy Fuck. And I've always felt that when you name your band Holy Fuck or something like that, I almost think you're saying, basically, we're never going to be successful. Seriously.
Especially 10 years ago, because there's no way you're going to get sold in the retail outlets.
Right, exactly.
Especially Walmart.
Yeah.
When Walmart had a bigger music section. Yeah.
Yeah, I always thought that was a kind of almost an artificial limiting factor that you put on yourself. Yeah.
Yep.
So.
And there's no going back from there.
Not really.
Because then if you change your name, it's like, well, we want to sell more albums now, so we're going to change our name.
Well, then people do things like just make themselves HF.
Okay.
You know, that's been done.
That's true.
I mean, but, you know, I always felt like the same way about the Butthole Surfers. It was kind of like, okay, I get it, but isn't that going to be kind of difficult down the line? What are you going to do? But they actually managed to make it work. But
yeah, because it was in the alternative 90s.
Yes.
Yeah. So what's your song pick of the week?
Well, my song pick of the week is the newest track from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Another name we could talk about, but only because it ends up either getting shortened to the Chili Peppers or RHCP. And I've always sort of felt like those sort of nicknames that people give bands. I mean, it drove me crazy when people would talk about Sonic Youth as the Sonics. Hey, there's another band called the Sonics that, by the way, Sonic Youth knows about. So I don't know, that always irritated me. But the track is called Dark Necessities.
Oh, this is good.
And but this track is from their new album called The Getaway. It's their 11th studio album, which will be out apparently June 17th. It was produced by Danger Mouse, who is quite the storied producer at this point, even in a short career. And it's mixed by Nigel Goodrich, of course, Radiohead fame. So here it is.
Coming down to the latter day, we got many moons that are deep in place, so I keep an eye on the shadow's mouth to see what it has to say.
I think they always put out an amazing lead single.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've had some albums that have fallen flat for me, but every time they put out a lead single, I'm with it.
Yeah, they seem to have a knack for doing that, and I know people, including me sometimes, kind of roll our eyes about bands like the Chili Peppers. See, I just did it. it's just easier. But the thing is that if you go back and you look at the 11th studio album, and you go back and you listen to all these records, you find a track or two on every single one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that is incredibly difficult to do. I think what I like about this track is that it's kind of surprised me a little bit because it has a different kind of a groove than they normally do, at least in their more obvious tracks. And so
yeah.
I like that. I also think it's interesting because they have this, you know, new guitar player, relatively new now, but it's a lot of guitar on that that track. It's a lot of guitar. It's a lot of different things, which I find kind of interesting. And, I mean, obviously that shows a great deal of confidence in your newest member.
Yes.
To sort of let them go and do it. And I also think their production is really nice. And so it'll be interesting to see what the rest of the record is. I don't, you know, I'm not a huge fan or anything, but I'm always kind of interested in artists that can sustain something over that kind of period of time.
And I remember when they put out their greatest hits, I forget however many years ago, I thought, well, this is going to be useless because they're going to put out three or four more albums and we're going to have six or seven more singles that you could include on this.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. But I guess, I mean, greatest hits albums is kind of worthless in 2016 because you can just put together a playlist.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, it's an anachronism.
I don't know. Yeah, what am I complaining about?
Right,
who knows?
Exactly.
So we're going to take one more break. And when we come back, it is time to play Ask Lyle.
Aren't you Bill Murray, man? That's you Bill Murray?
Yeah, I'm Bill Murray, but let's keep that just between us, all right?
Bill Murray. Yo.
Just between us. And you guys are related.
Yeah, we cousins, we family, man.
Yeah, no, but you're messing with me now because you're both troublemakers.
So, troublemakers?
The Wu-Tang Clan.
Right, Wu-Tang Clan.
You're GZA, the genius.
That's right.
And you're RZA.
A.K.A.
Bobby Digital.
Yeah, you know it's hip-hop, yo. You know it's hip-hop. And you're Bill Murray. Bill Groundhog Day ghost-busting-ass Murray. Who you gonna call?
I know that. Just don't tell anybody, man.
Well, Sam, what you mean don't tell nobody, Bill Murray? I mean, people gonna come here, they gonna see you. You're Bill Murray. It's obvious. Unless you're wearing a disguise or something.
Well, I am wearing kind of a disguise.
Damn, that's harsh, money. You're a real caffeine junkie, aren't you?
Let's just keep it down. Just between us. Hey, cheers.
Back from the timeout. Jim Shear with Lyle Presler. Are you watching any of the Stanley Cup or NBA playoffs?
I watched some of the sixth and seventh, and I watched almost all the seventh game of the NBA playoffs.
Okay.
And I actually got my wife to watch a little bit of the seventh game, and because she'd been hearing about this Steph Curry guy, right? And she's like, what's all this about? And we watched a bit of it, and she's like, I can't believe he hits shots like that. And
it's crazy.
Because what's crazy about it is not so much that he's a spot-up shooter, because we've had a lot of really good spot-up three-point shooters. It's the fact that most of the time, it seems like me playing basketball, where you just throw the thing almost sideways at the basket, and sometimes it goes in, and people go like, oh my God! You know? But the difference is he's doing it every single time. Yeah, so that was kind of fun to watch. I watched a little bit of the first Stanley Cup game, but but I got to admit that the problem I have with hockey is that I find it very exciting, but I don't understand anything about it, like all the technical concepts. So for instance, it took me forever to really understand what icing was. You know, I mean, that's the kind of thing. And some of it bothers me. Like, why should icing be a penalty? Like, if I can shoot the thing all the way down at the other end and screw you, then I should be able to do that.
Well, it's stalling. You don't want the other team to stall.
I mean, is it stalling or is it defeating your is it defeating your drive?
Well, it is defeating your drive, but it's an easy way out. You can be like, all right.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't know. I mean,
knock it down to the other end of the ice.
Listen, I'm not going to argue with a sport that's that old that's had that concept because it sounds a little silly. But I guess, and there's a few other things that I don't really understand. But what I really love is when I'm listening to people talking about it, and they're talking about this line versus this line versus this line. Well, you know, our fourth line is better than their fourth line. And I'm going like, wow, that's crazy, man. I mean, I don't really understand any of it. But it's very exciting. And I have in the past, I have in the past definitely watched some Stanley Cup Finals hockey, definitely.
Okay. So will you be pulling for my Pittsburgh Penguins?
Obviously.
Thank you. And then Golden State versus Cleveland.
That's a tough one. I mean, I don't really care one way or the other.
Will you be rooting for one team over another?
I think I'm going to root for Cleveland.
Okay.
Only because I think Cleveland deserves a championship team.
Yes.
I think that's the big deal, is that if you look at the history of sports in Cleveland, it's got some wonderful moments in it. I mean, obviously Jim Brown and all that, but that's a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, and they're long suffering, and yet they keep coming back for more.
Yeah, their last sports title was in 1964.
Oh my. So
there was a recent ESPN 30 for 30 documentary called Believe Land.
I think I saw, and, yeah, I saw that was what they were doing, yeah.
And I was in Cleveland over on the Sunday before Memorial Day, and I was talking to my uncles, and I said, "Well, did you watch Believe Land?" He's like, "No, it'll bring up too many bad memories."
Exactly.
I thought, "Wow, man, it runs deep."
It runs deep. So I'm hoping that, I mean, the whole thing with LeBron and leaving Cleveland and coming back to Cleveland, I would like to see him fulfill that sort of promise to those people.
Yeah, I want Cleveland too, but I love the Golden State Warriors.
Oh, I like them too.
How can you hate Steph Curry?
No.
You can't.
It's not and Thompson, Kate Thompson, man. I mean, that is just crazy. He's I mean, to have two people on your team who can do that kind of thing. But of course, it also brings up the notion, I don't want to get too deep into this, that you know, that you live by the sword and die by the sword. I mean, if you can if you go through a cold patch, you've got almost nothing.
Yeah.
So obviously LeBron and company are looking to exploit that, and
because watching basketball my whole life, teams never consistently shoot well.
Right.
So that's why I'm surprised that the Golden State Warriors are the first team I've ever seen that have consistently shot well.
Right.
Because if you watch the NCAA tournament, there'll be a team that's super hot. They'll be on fire, and I say, well, they can't sustain that, and they never do,
they
end up losing in the Sweet 16.
Exactly.
So shall we play another round of Ask Lyle?
Why not?
Ask Lyle.
All right, here we go. And I'm going to check Twitter real quick because I sent out a tweet today asking if anyone had any questions for you. But let's begin while I look. Let's begin. Last week, you ranted about Iggy and the Stooges using Search and Destroy in an Audi commercial. Mm. So we always hear stories, or we know stories of people saying yes. We rarely hear stories of people saying no. So my question is, when was the last time Minor Threat said no?
Oh, yeah. Well, the last time we said no was when we were approached by the company Sonos, who makes the speaker systems.
Mm-hmm.
And they had done a couple of really interesting commercials. One had Gang of Four in it, which was a big surprise to me. And I don't know them, and I don't know their circumstances. So I mean, I was just surprised because of the choice of music.
Now, can I stop you right there?
Sure.
So when Gang of Four does a commercial, does that sway you either way?
No,
it
doesn't.
Well, if Gang of Four did it,
no, at all.
Okay,
no, that doesn't enter the picture at all. I mean, only if it's down to, well, we're thinking about it, then you might look at the company you're in, okay? But that's not a frontline consideration. But I thought it was interesting, and the commercials were really well done, and they approached us, and it was a universal no, because even though you would think, well, musical equipment or, you know, stereo equipment, at least that's sort of in the wheelhouse, right? I mean, it's not gum. You know, and it's not Audis. It's in the wheelhouse. But the problem was, once again, it's like we're not in the position to endorse a product. The music wasn't there to endorse a product. And I make a distinction, and again, it may be artificial, I make a distinction between somebody's film, right, or somebody's television show, which is a creative project, I mean, setting aside, we all know this is about making money at the end of the day for everybody, but I think of that as a creative project as opposed to selling a product. And when I say, like, I'm going to put my name on this product, I probably would have to have invented it, you know, and say, well, this is Lyle Pressler's new speaker system. I can't do it because, I have a Sonos product in my house, and it's a fine thing, and I don't have any problem with it, except that why am I using my music to tell you to go buy this product over some other product? Only because they came to me and offered me money. And I don't, and plus the fact, I just don't think that's where Minor Threat is. Minor Threat wasn't about that. Now, if you're a pop act, you know, and you're just basically about making a pop song and having fun with it and whatever, and you decide, hey, that our pop song fits in really, really well with this thing. Okay. You know, again, it's a personal choice. I don't think that music should be necessarily used to sell products, but it's been going on forever. So,
So we talked about Rage Against the Machine earlier, or I guess I should say we talked about the Prophets of Rage earlier. My question for you is, are you familiar with Rage Against the Machine's cover of Minor Threat's In My Eyes?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, they sought permission for it.
Okay.
And we've been paid by, is it Columbia? I don't know who their record company was, but we've been paid. There was never any issue of anything like that. It was part of a covers record that was actually a pretty interesting record. And I had no problem with what they did. My only sense of it was it would have been nice if they had transformed it a little bit.
Okay.
They played it pretty straight. In fact, they played it almost entirely straight. And I was kind of hoping when I heard about them that they were going to do it, when it came to us, I thought, oh, this is going to be really interesting. You know, they're going to do something with this.
Because you had Tom Morello doing your part.
Exactly. And I was hoping that Tom would just take an opportunity to do something crazy. You know what I mean? Or that they would somehow slow it down or speed it up in parts and they would do different things with it. And I realized the problem with our songs is it's not really easy to interpret them. I mean, they're kind of what they are. And I think that the problem with Minor Threat, unless you want to... And there have been artists, by the way, have completely deconstructed Minor Threat. But they're usually very obscure, you know, things coming out of, you know, Eastern Europe or Japan or something. And they're interesting. But I was really hoping for a little bit more from Rage Against the Machine. And I don't mean that in a really super critical way.
I get you.
It was just, you always get fascinated when you say to someone, sure, we don't have any problem with you covering the song. You know, and by the way, they don't even have to ask, you know, they could just do it. But usually they do. You're always sort of wondering what they're going to do with it. And yet, knowing the songs as I do, I kind of feel like, what do you do with it? I mean, we used to, at Soundcheck, we got so tired of doing sound checks that we used to play Everything is Reggae just to check everything, you know. And Ian wouldn't sing. He would just stand there and because he didn't want to wear out his vocals. But we would just sit up there and play every single song. I mean, whatever song we were playing, we'd do it as a reggae song.
Do you have any recordings of those?
I don't. No, I don't have anything. It wasn't good, Jim. It was definitely not any good.
No, I'd be interested to just hear it.
Yeah,
though.
I guess you could do reggae versions. I don't know. I don't know what you would accomplish with that.
Now, what will happen if Prophets of Rage cover In My Eyes?
Well, that'd be great. I more the merrier, you know? The more the merrier.
My final question of Ask Lyle, what are your thoughts on the gorilla?
Oh, you mean in Cincinnati? Yeah. Not gorillas, the band, right?
No.
Yeah.
The only reason I'm asking is because it seemed to be the hot topic of conversation over Memorial Day weekend.
It definitely was. Definitely was. I mean, I read some stuff about it. I heard some people talking about it on the radio. And the problem with all that stuff is that it goes so viral so quickly, and there's so much bad information, misinformation, back and forth. I don't know. My thoughts on it was, first of all, like, I understand that people enjoy signing petitions and doing stuff like that. I don't know how profitable that is for everybody in the long run, and it simply upsets other people. But the legitimate arguments that seemed to come out of it were, first of all, the people saying that the zoo acted improperly in actually shooting the gorilla once the kid was in the enclosure and being dragged. And remember, this is a kid being dragged, not standing in the background, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And from everything I understand from all the experts, including the conservation experts and the Jack Hannas of the world, you know, Jack Hanna, there was really no choice because the size of that animal and the nature of the tranquilizers they would have used, it wouldn't have gone down fast enough. And also there's an unpredictability apparently when you shoot something like that with tranquilizer. It's a dart, and they may get so irritated by what's happening to them and so disoriented, the gorilla could kill the kid without meaning to. And mm-hmm. then there were the people who said, well, the gorilla is actually protecting the kid. Well, maybe, but we don't know. And the gorilla's definition of protecting the kid might be completely different than ours, because we can't get inside the mind of the gorilla. I think the other thing that it brought up to me was, and of course you had the people railing against the so-called animal activists and all this sort of moral relativism that goes on in the world. But the really interesting thing to me, and I don't have a position on this, was the notion of what's worth more. A four-year-old kid's life who obviously has stupid parents who allow them to get into an enclosure, or this endangered gorilla. And you know, somebody pointed out, look, once the gorilla is dead and once these gorillas are gone, there's no science that brings them back. They're done. It's the end mm-hmm. of the species. And certainly losing a four-year-old boy isn't the end of the species, although it's the end of those families. For those families, it's the end of the world. So, mm-hmm. But the thing that interested me was the notion of what's worth more, the human life or the gorilla. And people said there's no circumstances under which an animal's life is worth more than a human being's. And I thought about that for a second. I thought, wait a minute. Actually, that's not true. We if you go to Africa, right, you go on those game preserves, one of the biggest problems they have there are poachers. People mm-hmm. come in and illegally poach elephants and big cats and things like that. And those, the authorization for the game wardens who patrol those is to shoot on sight any poacher. It's not even a question of, it's not like the police here in the United States or whatever. If you see someone poaching, you shoot them dead. And to me, so we've obviously made it, they've obviously made a decision, and that decision is the animals are worth more than the people. But in this instance, of course, the people who are trying to kill the animals as opposed to the kid who falls into the enclosure. So, I mean, there's a lot of differences here. But it does raise an interesting ethical question for us. And I'm sure the vegans out there will know exactly what the answer to that question is. Mm-hmm. But it does come down to the, you know, to our values and how we approach animals in this world. But really, for me, what it comes down to is the question of how did the kid get in there? Are the parents in some ways negligent? And I know that the police are actually investigating at this point. So,
okay. Wow.
Yeah, that's the last thing I heard yesterday was the police were investigating to see exactly what happened. Now, they would sort of have to do that anyway. That isn't a bombshell, I don't think. But now,
isn't the Cincinnati Zoo supposed to be really nice?
Yes, it is. And they've never had an incident like this. And apparently the fencing and the barriers that they erected exceeded what was required of them. So
okay, because I thought maybe it was so nice and so natural that there wasn't a huge gap or a huge fence between the people and the animals.
Not what I understand.
And everyone over the years just respected that, and then this four-year-old kid was like, well, look, I can just hop over. Look how easy it is. Mom, look, I'm with the gorilla now.
Well, you know, we don't know. That's not my understanding, but we don't know how good a climber this kid was. I mean, no, every four-year-old is not made the same.
Have they talked to climbing experts yet?
I don't know that. And I haven't actually seen. The problem with it is that no one has video, at least so far, of the kid actually getting in there. What we have video of is after he's in there. The woman who took the actual image, the video, said that she suddenly saw the kid on the other side of the barrier, on the wrong side. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of going through the brush, and she was yelling at him and trying to grab him through the bars. Now, there's a space between the bars and the actual enclosure, so I don't know, I mean, the fence and the actual enclosure. So somebody suggested he slipped through the bars. I find it hard to believe that the bars would have been spaced in such a way that he could have just slipped through.
A story dense with layers.
Yes, it is.
I guess it was a blessing in a way that it happened over Memorial Day weekend.
Mm.
So if you were with family and friends or people that you usually don't talk to, you had instant conversation.
That's true.
So that will do it for us. We'll be back next week for Lyle Presler. My name is Jim Shear, and we will see yins later.
So long, farewell, I'll be the same tonight.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building.